Welcome to the show, ESPN 102.5 The Game, Braden Gall, Luke Rogers, Julian Council, Intern of Science, Melody hanging out. I want to remind you guys that ESPN 102.5 The Game is your flagship station for the reigning Western Conference champions, the Nashville Predators. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter, and like us on Facebook to keep up with all things Smashville. Twitter at 102.5 The Game. Make sure you're tweeting us reasons why someone in your life deserves a $100 gift card from A Moment's Peace Spa, and we'll take care of you guys there. So continue to tweet at 102.5 The Game that way, and then of course Instagram at The Game Nashville, Facebook.com/The Game Nashville. Jeff Schwartz joining us here, of course, from Sirius XM NFL and SB Nation. Jeff, good to talk to you, buddy. How are you, man?
I'm doing great. It's a wonderful morning when you get to watch football all day Sunday.
Well, would you call what happened between the Titans and the Cardinals football?
That would be tough. I picked Arizona to win, I believe, just because the Titans have been so up and down this year, and I thought there'd be more scoring, but it doesn't surprise me the way the game ended up unfolding.
Do you, hey Jeff, Luke Rogers here. Question: What do you think about Mariota this far into his third season in the NFL? As far as development, and do you think that the offensive woes fall squarely on his shoulders?
Well, I'm a big Mariota fan. You know, I went to Oregon, so I followed his career. We didn't play at the same time, and the first couple of years he was out, I was surprised at how quickly he made the transition from that spread offense to a pro style. Malarkey is kind of force fed this pro style offense on him, and I've written about this, and I think it was a smart approach to do. To basically say, look, we're going to run the football and we're going to force you to learn to play from the pocket. But we've seen with Deshaun Watson the short time that he had opportunity to play this year that you actually can tailor an offense maybe to where you do have some of those college concepts in there, which Mariota has done in the past. We see what the Panthers have done with Cam Newton, which I think is kind of a little more aggressive than what the Texans did with Watson. But you kind of have to find a happy medium, and right now it just doesn't look like it's supposed to. And I think one last thing, I'm going to write about this today about Mariota and Derek Carr specifically. You know, both of them spent the whole offseason rehabbing, and they were not able to keep their routine, which they had done their entire careers. And I wonder if that played a role in both those guys struggling this season.
Jeff Schwartz joining us here. How can you tell when it's a play caller's fault? Like if we're breaking this down and we're like, hey, the offensive line may not be great and the receiving core may not all be that great and the quarterback sort of struggled and we don't like the play call. How do you know when it's the coaching's fault and not something else?
That's a good question, and I think it has to do with our guys getting open. I think that you can tell based on rhythm of an offense whether it looks kind of like it's supposed to. And I think that's obviously hard to quantify, but you can tell what offense looks in rhythm. The Titans at points this year have not looked in rhythm. You know, the guys getting open, you know, issue, is that a personnel thing where guys can't win against man coverage or guys don't know how to play versus cover two or whatever coverage is, or is the play designer not designing plays to get those guys open? So I think those are questions that I might not be advanced enough to answer those. Playing offensive line, I'm learning about routes and things like that. But, you know, the Titans signed Decker. They drafted Davis. And so you would think that they would be able to have more of a downfield passing attack.
Jacksonville goes on and handles Seattle in really, really sort of impressive fashion. And they're now 9-4 now, and they're sitting a game up in the division. I know you wrote about this. This team – I still don't think anyone truly believes in Blake Bortles, but it's hard to look around this team and see how they've performed against the teams they've performed against and not consider them a legitimate contender in the AFC, right?
After, and you look at who they beat, obviously they beat the Steelers, went up to Pittsburgh and dominated them. They dominated a good Seahawks team. Look, the Seahawks don't play as well on the road, so I'm not terribly surprised the Seahawks didn't show up. And you know, Russell Wilson, you know, completes two really long passes, and that's how he got a lot of their points. But look, what Jacksonville does is what Tom Coughlin and Doug Marrone want them to be, which is a very physical offense. They want to run the football with Fournette, obviously, and you kind of saw at the end of the game, things get a little awry because Seattle really couldn't take that Jacksonville gave it to them, which Seattle doesn't get very often. And then, you know, they want to be on defense. They want to get after the passer, which is the way that Coughlin built his Giants teams. Won the Super Bowl, and that's what they are. Now, do I think they're going to win the Super Bowl? No. But do I think that they can put a scare into New England or Pittsburgh again? 100%. The question I think becomes for the future with them is you know, Blake Bortles has not played terrible this year. Is he a guy that they look to keep? I mean, what do they do with the quarterback position? So they have a lot of answers, a lot of questions to be answered in the offseason. But I love their style of play, man. I mean, they get after you. They're downhill, and on defense, they really rush the passer well.
Jeff, question about the AFC playoff picture here. Of course, New England is sort of the consummate favorite always out of the AFC. We watched the Steelers play the Ravens last night, struggled a bit against a Ravens team that's been up and down. In your mind, out of the AFC, who's the biggest threat to the Patriots? You know, we just talked about the Jags, but is there a team that you think has, you know, what team do you think has the best shot at sort of dethroning Brady and the Brady bunch there?
Well, you know how you get after Brady, and that's rushing the passer. So look at Jacksonville. Look at the Chargers. If the Chargers end up getting in. Teams that rush the passer really well. You know, Pittsburgh does it okay, and T.J. Watt has really come on, but Harrison has taken kind of a backseat. They don't really have, I would say, consistent pass rush. But Jacksonville, San Diego, the way San Diego's playing right now, I think the Chiefs, my brother plays for the Chiefs, I'm going to say this no matter what, but I think the Chiefs win on Saturday against the Chargers. They're playing at home. But I like San Diego, man. Rivers is not going to be scared go to New England playing those guys. They can rush the passer. He can throw the ball. He can put it up to Keenan Allen. So I mean, the Chargers or Jacksonville, to me, would be the two teams that can give the Patriots the most trouble.
I think many people believed that, at least until yesterday, that the Eagles were the team to beat in the NFC. But should the Carson Wentz injury turn out to be as bad as people think it is, how does that change the way you view the NFC playoff picture and who makes a deep run?
Well, I've always believed in the Saints as coming out of the NFC. I know they struggled Thursday night a little bit, but the style of play that they bring is a lot like what the Jaguars do. And they run the football now, and they still have Drew Brees, right? They're able to run the football and have Drew Brees. And they can rush the passer better this year because Lattimore is in that back end locking down one side of the field. You know, the Vikings are very formidable. They didn't play a good game yesterday and almost beat the Panthers on the road. It was their third straight road game. They had three turnovers, missed the field goal. Just a sloppy game from them. Those are probably the two teams. I think the Rams are just not there yet, and it's okay. I think they're a year or two ahead of schedule. They've played some close games against some good teams. Just haven't won, right? They didn't beat the Vikings. They didn't beat the Seahawks. They didn't beat the Eagles. They beat the Saints at home by six. So they've had, you know, more downs and ups, I would say, against good opponents. So those are the three. You know, with the Eagles, it's interesting because, you know, an ACL injury is something you can theoretically play through if you have a strong lower body, strong legs, can kind of help stabilize that knee. And, you know, I do wonder if the Eagles try to hold out hope that Wentz could rehab for a couple of weeks and come back to the playoffs. If I were them, I'd shut him down because his future, I think, is more important than one season, even though they're hot right now. But that's interesting to see how they play this out.
Jeff Schwartz joining us here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. If you had to pick the Titans' record over the last three games at San Francisco, the LA Rams at home, and Jacksonville at home, what would your projection be for the record over those three games?
You said Jacksonville. Oh, the very end. So they have Jacksonville. Who else? Seattle and what else?
They go at San Francisco next week. They get the Rams and the Jags. So two really good teams, and at San Francisco.
Where are they playing the Rams at?
At home.
I'll tell you what, San Francisco is playing really good football right now. I think Jimmy, the Niners stole Jimmy Garoppolo. I mean, second round draft pick. I know they have to pay him after this offseason, but he's looked every bit as advertised. Oh man! And then they go to San Francisco. I kind of think San Francisco wins that game. They probably and in the Ram man. One, it could be 0-3.
So 8-8 for the Titans, huh? Probably doesn't get them into the playoffs, does it?
Jeff Fisher's favorite record.
Titans fans just drove off the road, by the way.
I know my audience. That's going to be a tough three-game stretch, especially with the way they're playing. And you have to think that those teams have a lot to play. Well, the Niners don't have a lot to play for. They're playing better recently. They were probably excited to play. But look at the Rams. They could be playing for some sort of bye. And Jacksonville could be playing. Really, I mean, Jacksonville – could be playing for a three seed. I don't think, you know, they can't really catch those top guys, but they could be playing for for that division as well. So I think it's going to be tough for Tennessee to win maybe two of those three games.
Jeff, always a pleasure, man. Good talking with you, dude, and we'll talk soon.
All right, take care, guys.
Yeah, Jeff Schwartz there, NFL on SiriusXM there, as well as SB Nation. And he's a former Oregon guy, and so obviously close to the situation there with Marcus. But there's one thing that I think that we don't – there's one thing that he brought up that I don't think – I'm not sure it's talked about enough when we discuss Marcus Mariota and we discuss sort of his trajectory. You talked about quarterback development not being linear. Mm-hmm. There's one thing that he brought up that I don't think we've talked a lot about at all in Marcus's career here in Nashville. And I want to get to that when we come back. So we're going to do that when we come back. Luke Rogers, Braden Gall hanging out here. I want to remind everybody, ESPN 102.5 The Game and 94.9 Game 2 is your exclusive home for the Franklin American Mortgage Music City Bowl as the Kentucky Wildcats take on the other Wildcats of Northwestern on Friday, December 29th at 3:30 p.m. Our 2017 Music City Bowl coverage is brought to you by Hi-Fi Buys, the Houston Clinic, and R&S Wood Flooring. We'll be right back. What have we not talked enough about with Marcus Mariota? We'll do that. 102.5 The Game. ESPN 102.5 The Game, Luke Rogers, Braden Gall, Julian Council playing DJ today.
Dude, love that coming in on that.
Yeah,
dude, we were just laughing in the break because Twitter is amazing. Like, literally, we're watching, there's a Twitter feud going on, or a war of words going on right now between...
Welcome back to the NFL, Josh Gordon.
Yeah, between the Cleveland Browns wide receiver, Josh Gordon, who hasn't really played significantly since 2014.
2013.
2013 was his last touchdown catch, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. Did he play a couple games? I was thinking 14.
He might have, but his last touchdown was 2013.
Yeah. And Demaryius Randle, who was the Packers corner who D'd him up yesterday, are going back and forth on Twitter. It's entertaining.
It's pretty funny.
Yeah, if you have Twitter, check it out because
what I love about this Twitter feud is you have a player A who's significantly better than player B,
mm-hmm.
right? But player B's team just beat player A's team
and
is significantly better than player A's team. So like Josh Gordon is the superior athlete,
by far,
significantly better player, talking trash with a player that he is very clearly better than.
Right.
But Demaryius Randle's team is clearly better than your team, and you gave up a 2-touchdown lead in the fourth quarter, and you're 0-13. So like there's
a Packers team without their
starting quarterback.
Yes, exactly.
Like, there's a real reason for both of them to shut up.
That's what makes it so entertaining, though. Is it like
right?
These guys are
right.
It's
Randall's
not like
we won. I don't care. Gordon's like, I will kill you, dude. Like I'm so much better than you.
Right.
And they're both
and
true.
It's amazing. So Twitter is as much as the God. Can you imagine if we had this back like in the 70s and 80s when stuff was just wild in the NFL, Wild West, and you had like Kenny Stabler tweeting it.
Oh my God.
Mean Joe Green or something. I mean,
I want Ronnie Lott on Twitter.
Oh my gosh. It would
like
be
circa 83.
Right? Oh man. Chuck Cecil. Just fine for hitting too hard. I don't know what he'd say on there.
Cut off my finger. It's fine. Put me back in the game.
Oh my gosh. Yep.
All right. We were going to talk about Marcus Mariota. And Jeff Schwartz brought up something that I think is pretty interesting. And it's something that we haven't really sort of in this grand conversation about the development of Marcus Mariota, right? Like, well, he goes from 2-14, and then you grow into year two, and you know the numbers are there, the wins are there, and then you kind of come into this year, and you're kind of like, all right, what's the next step? And it hasn't happened for him. And he did bring in two very interesting points. One was about he's going to write an article later about Derek Carr and Marcus Mariota both struggling this year, both not having time to work on their game, so to speak,
because
in the offseason,
yeah.
because of dealing with rehab in the offseason. But I think the one thing that we're all a little surprised by and that we don't give it enough conversation, I'm not sure how it fixes him playing against the Cardinals yesterday, for example. But there is this thing about when he came, and I covered him coming out of high school going into Oregon. So I covered him when he was a redshirt freshman at Oregon, and he was spectacular then. He was spectacular his entire career. He carried a really bad coaching staff to the national title game for Oregon. He was a brilliant football player. He was the minute he stepped on the field for Oregon. But he also ran a zone read option, a spread option offense that was generally a check with me on the sideline offense, never under center, and very rarely going through a deep progressional read thing. It's a one read and go kind of offense.
Right.
All of those were major questions when he was drafted. All of those things were brought up in his profile, right? Like these are the things that we were worried about with Marcus when he came out of college. And I don't think it has to be considered a massive success or surprise in the positive that he was able to adapt to the pro-style offense as quickly as he was able to.
Yeah, we're talking about a guy who never took a snap under center in college and really had everything, decisions all made before him, didn't have to get through to his third receiver in his progression. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, the whole, the way he was so successful so quick, I mean, I think it's a testament, like you said, to his work ethic and also to, you know, his upside. I think we're just seeing, you know, some of the problems in his game really being magnified. And it's interesting, the Derek Carr comparison, I think, is so accurate on so many levels, because you got a guy who got hurt last year, coming off an injury, didn't get to spend the offseason working on his game, had to get work on his health. Then you had two offensive lines last year that were so, so good. The Raiders' offensive line was fantastic last year, and so was the Titans.
Right.
And they're both
you're right.
Not that good this year. And so you're seeing the importance of having a good offensive line. Even in Oakland now, where you have Marshawn Lynch in that backfield, and you think would take more pressure off Carr, the guys up front just aren't getting it done like they did last season. I think it's the same thing about the Tennessee Titans and their offensive line. And I think it's reflecting in both of those guys' games this season. So, I mean, excellent parallel. It just so happens the Titans have a little bit of an easier schedule and have been able to win some games in spite of Marcus not playing well.
Yeah, and I think about that conversation, and that we maybe don't give Marcus enough credit for how quickly he adapted to the NFL game and to Mike Mularkey's system. I don't know what that means today, though. I don't know if that's like, all right, well, we give you credit for that, but why can't you keep doing it? Why are you struggling this year? Why are you second in the NFL to Deshaun Kizer, of all people, in interceptions with 14? Why has your last four-game run for the Titans been 2-2 in the record, 3 touchdowns, 8 interceptions, and less than 200 yards passing per game? Why are you producing at that level? And then we can go deeper, right? We can go, all right, the offensive line's not as good, like you just talked about with the Raiders, same thing. Okay, Corey Davis, their number 5 overall first-round draft pick stud that's supposed to come in and be a difference maker, didn't practice at all during camp and got hurt in the second game and missed a bunch of time.
I think they were counting a lot on Davis being an impact, big impact player. We just haven't had that.
So that's happened.
Yeah.
And maybe the rest of the NFL is caught up to Terry Rubisky and Mike Mularkey's offense, because it worked last year and hasn't worked as much this year. So you sort of put it all together. I don't think you put it all on Mariota, but I think – to me, there's this 25% Marcus Mariota fault. Again, I go 25% Marcus, 15% O-line, 10% receiving core, and I might go 50% coaching. Because if Marcus is struggling, at some point it's on the coaching staff to stop putting him in the same positions.
Right. I mean,
fine, he doesn't make that throw anymore, right? Like, he's not playing well this year. We'll change the throw. Don't plan that throw anymore, right?
Yeah.
Like, scheme him into something else.
Yeah, and that's coaching. It's adjustments. It's about making adjustments. And you know, you're right. Other teams have a year of film now looking at this offense, right? A year of film to break it down. And I think it's really sort of common or analogous to when you have a year of film on a quarterback and a guy. You can break down tendencies. You can. So I think the Titans, much like the Patriots do, need to be better at self-scouting, better at doing different things, better at in-game adjustments. And actually, you're right. You've got a quarterback that's slumping. Help him out. Give him some easy throws. Scheme around it. Scheme guys open. Lean on the running game. Like, do things to help Marcus Mariota improve. And I don't see that happening.
You said scheme guys open. And I asked Jeff Schwartz there. I said, how is it that you can tell when it's play calling? And I still think it's tough to tell when it's play calling. But if guys are never open, and I'm not sure. Like I felt like early against Seattle and Jacksonville, there were a couple of plays where like they clearly dialed up sort of the Jonnu Smith tight end against Jacksonville, where the tight end screen where they sort of schemed up a backside tight end screen pass that actually ended up being a 40-plus yard touchdown pass. Like, that's scheming a guy open, right? You called the right play at the right time.
Right.
That's called good play calling. I don't think Terry Rubisky has been terrible all season, but right now he's got a quarterback that's not like I don't see. Do you see a lot of players running wide open?
No. You don't, and that's a lot on the play call, and that's a lot. And guys, if you're lining people up and expecting them to win their one-on-ones, or if you fall in love with the same set of plays, and perhaps this was happening with Rubisky, you see a lot of the same stuff. It's not the defense has seen this on film. They know what's going on. Marcus has to make unbelievable throws. He made a great throw down the sideline to Delanie Walker, which Delanie wasn't able to catch.
It would have been a great catch,
right? But I mean that is a tough NFL throw.
Yeah.
And that's your first option. So that's either just a bad read by Mariota, or you just don't got, you don't have other options to go to.
Yeah.
Nobody's there.
I agree. It's just, it's that something needs to be changed. And I feel like you sort of are who you are as the quarterback right now. You need to sort of dumb it down and scheme it differently for him. So I do not put the season on any one player or part of this offense. I don't have a problem with that. But I will say from here on out, if you don't make adjustments, it's on the coaching staff from here on out. David in Nashville. What's up, David?
Hey, guys. Just wanted to share some thoughts. I've seen entirely too much of the same stuff going on offense. I mean, we've started, I don't know how many games, run, pass. And when you do that, the defense knows what's coming. So, I mean, I don't know if it's Malarkey, if it's Robiskie. I don't like Robiskie. I think Malarkey is an okay ball coach. I think he's what we need right now. Just a steady guy who's going to, you know, just keep looking forward. Keep moving forward and keep grinding, but Robiskie has got to go. He's gotten vanilla with his play calling and outdated, and the defense knows what's coming. That's just my thoughts on it.
Yeah, David, thanks for the call, man.
I mean, I think that's a good point, and I mean, I think it's what we've been saying in a lot of ways as well. Here's the thing, too, is that we don't necessarily know what each play call is or what's going on inside the locker room, but I think it's pretty easy if you watch enough games to see patterns. And that's just from a casual fan. And I mean, I would get the same thing. And look, you and I, for different reasons, watch a ton of Packer games. And I would say the same thing there is that, like, you often just see patterns, and it doesn't take a whole lot. And you got to watch a little bit of film to see what they like to do. And I just don't see any kind of creativity in that. And don't at me with this. Don't tell me because Adoree Jackson gets on the field twice on offense that they're being creative. Because I don't buy that. Because you got to be able to execute, you know, in your base offense, and they're not able to do that, and they're not doing anything inside of that, you know, to move things.
Fourth and 10 at the game on the line does not seem like the time to get creative by putting Adoree Jackson out there.
Thank you, Julian.
And at that point, the game's kind of, I mean, I guess
At the point, the game's not over. At the point is you don't put Adoree Jackson, who you drafted to play cornerback and be a kick returner, and throw the route short of the sticks for him to, like, to get a first down? What kind of sense does that make?
Well, that might be Mariota's
fault, too. Borderline, no, I don't care who. No, that's idiotic. He shouldn't be on the field.
Well, I don't care if he's on the field, guys. I mean, if he's
on the field, he's an option. And if that's who he throws it to, then, like, what? You throw it to Adoree Jackson?
If he's your most explosive player, I don't have a problem with him being on the field. What was it? Was it the Baltimore game or the Cincinnati game, maybe, where they had to run some clock to try to like, hey, they had the lead and they had the ball, and they gave him, like, the ball on a handoff up the middle. It was like a 3-yard dive play with Adoree Jackson. Like, that's my problem with Adoree Jackson.
Get him on the edge.
Like, if you're going to use him, be actually creative with him. Like, that's my problem. I don't have any problem with using Adoree Jackson. He is a dynamic player.
No, but he
was used that way in college. I have no problem.
Right, but I think sometimes when I bring up the argument, or at least in the past, about how it's just completely uncreative and the offense is vanilla and it's stagnant. Like, well, they put Adoree Jackson. Like, that's a cop out.
That doesn't change. I mean, that's a huge point. Yeah.
You got to run. You got to get in motions. Marcus has to get his guys moving across. You can pick out if they're in man zone. Put guys in motion to get advantageous, you know, matchups, because the NFL is about matchups. You've got to run misdirections. You've got to do things to keep a defense on its heels. And I didn't see any of that yesterday.
To the point, like, you don't put Adoree Jackson in the game to run, like, a 5-yard curl route.
Yes.
You don't put Adoree Jackson in the game to run a 3-yard dive play. You do put Adoree Jackson in the, like jet sweeps and
or
double
bubble
passes.
Screens.
Yeah, like, you do, just because he's in the game doesn't make you creative. You need to actually do something creative with him. I totally agree with that. Joe Rexroad, we'll find out what he agrees with. Of course he'll agree with us. Of course, Joe Rexroad.
This is Joe.
He'll join us
when
we come back. Luke Rogers, Brayden Gall, ESPN 102.5 The Game. ESPN 102.5 The Game, Brayden Gall, Luke Rogers, Julian Council, Joe Rexroad joining us here from the Tennessean. Obviously, also, by the way, tweet at 102.5 The Game, a reason why someone in your life deserves a moment's apiece day spa $100 gift card. So we'll choose that. We've got to choose that coming up next segment. Joe, what is going on, my man? How are you, buddy?
Hey, good to hear from you guys.
All right, so how would you describe the Titans-Cardinals football game yesterday?
Well, you know, it was like a lot of Titans games this year, like hard to watch, you know, but most of them have ended with some excitement in the fourth quarter and the Titans making some winning plays and sort of the prevailing belief that, you know, this team has some kind of special ingredients, and, you know, it may not be pretty all the time, but, you know, these guys are going to figure out a way to win. Of course, they're still 8-5, but yesterday was, to me, just an awful, awful day, obviously, for that offense. And, you know, I have to admit, I mean, I'm sitting there watching it, and I'm like, I could see these guys losing out right now. I mean, I know that 49ers are 3-10, but, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo's in place, and he's playing well. And of course, the last two games, those teams are flat out better than the Titans right now. So I think it was a really costly loss and just a terrible display from every possible angle of that offense.
Hey, Joe, Luke Rogers here. Question, I agree completely with everything you said there. And I think we talked earlier on the show about how I do believe it's a possibility the Titans could lose out. How do they fix this, though? If we're talking from a solution standpoint, from some positives for Titan fans, how do they fix the problems they have at this point in the season? And can they?
Yeah, Luke, you know, I do think that actually I like how they came out you know, a week earlier, a little bit more pass to run. And I think, you know, I think it's worth maybe even trying some tempo with Marcus Mariota. You know, it's you know, to be a steady diet. Obviously, you know, this team is built around trying to have a running game. I mean, that's the personnel and that's what they do, and it's not going to stop. And then they ran it well last week, but I think that's just what comes to mind is, try to get him throwing some short passes and get into a rhythm and go, you know, a two-minute offense early in a game, you know. And then there's the whole thing of running Mariota. I mean, that's why he just hurt his knee, you know, yesterday. He's usually very good at getting down on those slides. He was a little late getting down this time, didn't see the guy coming from the side and went down awkwardly. And so you add that to the nagging injury list for him. And that's the problem. I mean, I think whenever he shows that run threat and they show that, you know, it really benefits them. I mean, that's a problem for defenses, but you can't lose them. So that's, I don't know about that one. I mean, I think you still have to try to mix it in, but I don't think you can transition to a steady diet of that at all. You're going to get them killed. But, and that's the only thing I think of. I mean, look, you block better. The receivers have to get open, but you know what? There were some times yesterday where Mariota was just late on some passes and some guys were open. And, of course, there was also you know, the route mix-up with Rishard Matthews that was on him and Mariota's first pick. And there's times when he's just not seeing guys, like on his second pick. And I mean, if you really want to boil it down, he has to play much better.
Joe Rexroy joining us here from the Tennessean. And you said in your column as much. You said, listen, the receivers aren't playing as well. The running backs aren't running as well. The blockers aren't blocking as well. The quarterback's not playing as well. We've said all of that, too. We agree with you on all of that. And the play calling and the coaching hasn't been as good. What percentage, if you've got to go percentages here for this team struggling on offense the way it has, maybe the regression on offense from last year, what percentage of this falls on the Rubisky-Mularkey combo platter?
Well, if I go to my mentions, Braden, I'm going to go 99.999 on Mularkey Rubisky. No, I mean, it's certainly, I mean, I've argued, I mean, really, I've been a Mularkey apologist, you know, probably for a while compared to some fans. I've argued for a while, like, the system complaints, you know, I mean, there are choices. Look, if this was a system from the 80s, it's amazing. Mike Mularkey is an incredible, you know, visionary with all the receiver sweeps and run pass option and stuff. I mean, you know, it's not, look, I mean, they choose to do what they do. They can go tempo. They can go 4-wide. They have that in the playbook. You know, they have to have good game plans and play selections. And I do think yesterday I'd put a bigger chunk. I don't know if I can come up with numbers for you, but I'd put a bigger chunk on the coaches for sure. I thought the plan was terrible, and I thought the predictability of the play calling was, I mean, it was, you're up there and you can call it before every snap just about. And when you can do that, you know, that's probably pretty easy for the Cardinals defense, and some of those Cardinals defenders said as much after the game too, by the way. So I think a bigger percentage goes on the coaches yesterday, no question about it. You know, but I think you look back through all this stuff, and there are some plays to be made out there that aren't being made, and there are some plays to be made that the Titans have been making, sometimes in 2 minute, in a close game in the fourth quarter, Mariota finds Delanie Walker, as he did last week against the Texans to win that game. They're making a lot of those plays, but just the overall nature of this offense, I really think it goes on. All those parties you mentioned have a decent-sized share of the blame.
Joe Rexroy from the Tennessean. Joe, thoughts on the offensive line? I know that a lot of people want to point at the coaches, and a lot of people want to point at Marcus Mariota. What in your opinion is going on with this offensive line that was so highly touted and so successful last year and just seems to have taken a few steps back? Is there anything you could point to specifically for sort of the regression in the play from the offensive line?
I mean, I think they need to get better inside. And, I kind of thought that last year too, but they worked really well together. Obviously last year, Luan and Conklin had, tremendous seasons. I think they're having good seasons. Luan was hurt yesterday. I mean, he gave up a sack early, but he also was hurt. He's got the back thing. I'm sure health is part of it, but I do think that, in the off season, they're going to get at least one guard. That's something I would expect. I think they probably have to get stronger in there. But, yeah, it's hard, Luke. I mean, because, again, when you have same guys, same coach, same system, same everything, unless there are serious physical problems, you would think that the cohesion and the timing and all that would be strong. And at times it just doesn't look that way. But, again, now there's where – again, third and one to Derrick Henry yesterday. I mean, there was nothing they were going to do. The Cardinals threw everything at that, and there were, too many hats to block. So right. That one's on the coaches. I mean, at times, it is just simply counting up the hats. And so that's where the coaches have to give them more help.
Joe, real quickly, 3 games left to go. What is your projected record for the Titans in those 3 games?
I mean, I really this game to me is the biggest game of Mike Mularkey's tenure as Titans head coach. It's a huge game for Marcus Mariota. If you lose this one, and I mean, the Rams are a flat out better team than the Titans, and I think again, so are the Jaguars. But I guess I'd give the Titans this next one, and it's hard to give them the next two. So I'd call it 9-7, and there's a chance they still get in with that, but if they don't, that's a huge, huge failure in a year that saw no Andrew Luck and Deshaun Watson go out, and knowing those guys are coming back next year, and the division is totally going to be different, and Jacksonville's probably going to have a quarterback. This is your window.
No, I totally agree. Joe, always a pleasure, man. Next time we'll have lots more positive things to talk about.
There you go. Okay, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Joe Rexroy joining us there, of course, from the Tennessean. You can follow him there. All kinds of great stuff when it comes to Preds, Titans, Vols, all that stuff. So we'll take a quick pause. When we come back, we got to pick out our gift card winner for A Moment's Peace Day Spa, Salon and Day Spa. And, of course, look ahead. What's next for the Titans? Because I want to get your thoughts, Luke, on the schedule and what the expectations should be, because there's a lot of talk in this room and in that other room back there where Julian's sitting about 8-8 being the way this team's going to finish. So we'll do that when we come back right here at ESPN 102.5 The Game. You listen to The Morning Show live from The Game Nashville Studios, presented by Wholesale Link of Mount Juliet. I feel like the show's way cooler with that music playing.
Dude, we just get
with me talking.
It is a funky Monday morning.
ESPN 102.5 The Game. We'll have an update, by the way, on Taylor DeJuan coming up here in just a second. ESPN 102.5 The Game is your exclusive home for the college football playoff on New Year's Day as Oklahoma and Heisman Trophy winner Baker Mayfield takes on Georgia at the Rose Bowl in Pasadena, California, followed by Clemson and Alabama in a rubber match at the Sugar Bowl in New Orleans. It doesn't get any better than that, folks. Coverage on New Year's Day begins at 3 p.m. right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Again, we'll get a Taylor DeJuan update here momentarily, but Julian Council, every day for like the next couple of weeks, we're giving away a $100 gift card to A Moment's Peace Salon and Day Spa. You tweet us at 102.5 The Game during the show. At the end of each show, we'll announce a winner every day. Tell us, be creative, use photos. Tell us why someone in your life deserves a little pampering, a little rest and relaxation, because we love the folks over at Moments Peace, and they've done a great job giving us and partnering. We love partnering with them, and they're giving a lot of stuff to you guys. Some
stuff. Free stuff.
There we go. That's good. That was good. So today's our first one in Julian Council. You have the floor, you have the microphone, and you have our first winner.
Yeah, hey, folks, please don't hate me if I don't choose you. There's a lot of great ones today, but one I have to choose because of the event that went on last week or this past weekend, the Army-Navy game in Philadelphia. Thomas Brunsvold, he told us that his wife deserves a Moments Peace gift card because she surprisingly bought him a ticket to the Army-Navy football game. It looks like he's with his son, who was a midshipman at the U.S. Naval Academy in Annapolis.
So this is awesome.
That's awesome. That's awesome. A bucket list kind of thing for everybody. The snow game, and then, of course, Army 2 years in a row. Suck it, Navy.
Yeah, well. Whoa. Hey, don't let you hate the troops.
What?
Why
my
do you
dad
hate
was
the
in
troops?
The Army, so Army wins.
Oh, okay. By the way, during the break, Julian Council was visibly weeping behind the glass.
So, great job. Wife buys ticket for husband. Husband is sent to Army-Navy game to be with son at Army-Navy game, who's in attendance there at the game.
Love that.
That's pretty cool. So he then, in response, gets to give her a $100 gift card to a Moments Peace Solana Day Spa. Mm-hmm. What's his name?
Thomas Brunsvold. Technically, I'm giving it to her, but yeah, sure. He can take credit.
Sure.
So we will direct message you and get you information so you can get that to your wife. And I hope you enjoy the game, even though it snowed and Navy lost for the second year in a row.
And so that's, I think, just the first Commander-in-Chief trophy.
Go Army, beat first, Navy. Yeah, first Commander-in-Chief trophy since like 96.
It's a long time.
So,
yeah. Wow.
Let's go.
It's about time, Army. It's about time.
Black Knights of the Hudson are back.
I love
I didn't know he's so passionate about the Army football team.
He's not. I love the Army uniforms.
This is an act. This is the Florida act. I love
the uniforms for Army. The Navy uniforms, not so much.
Army uniforms were awesome.
The Army unis were great. And I love
the snow. Oh, gosh.
There's a picture of a Buffalo Colts tackle where there's a bill and a Colt laying on the ground. And like all you can see is like the top of their helmets. They're covered in snow. Football is fantastic in the snow.
I love it. I love that they play.
It's not good to drive in it.
No.
But it's amazing to play football.
It is. Yeah, it's not great to drive in it. Yeah. I was in Atlanta on Friday. Had to drive back. They got like 6 inches in Atlanta on Friday. And no one knows how to drive in the south snow.
So they don't get a lot of practice.
No,
that's okay, fair.
I was just saying. Yeah.
I lived in Atlanta for the Blizzard of 92? I think, and I want to say it was like 3 feet.
The blizzard of 92.
Yes,
there's never
been
a blizzard in Atlanta.
Oh yes,
come on.
There's probably I guarantee there's a Wikipedia page of this.
Just they get like a foot of snow and they call it a blizzard?
No, it was like 3 feet of snow.
I don't believe it.
I think the blizzard of 92 doesn't really sound like too tough of a storm name either. I bet it's probably disappointed.
I typed in blizzard 1992 Atlanta, first article up. 21 years later, Atlanta slammed by a rare blizzard. AJC.
Wow. Dude, hey, don't even question Braden, Julian. Look at you down there.
It's not a blizzard.
I don't care.
It's actually got a Wikipedia page. The 1993 storm of the century. No, that's a different place. No, I was there. I was like 10 years old. It was awesome. I was like, oh my God, because snow. This is tremendous. Yeah. I was building, forts and stuff and having snow fights in the backyard.
I think
great.
It snowed one time when I was growing up, and we lived in Northern California. In the valley, though, it didn't snow. You could drive to the snow. So, like when it snows here in the winter, I love it here in Nashville.
Oh, I think it's great.
It's awesome.
My daughter got her first snow experience last year, and we were watching like Alabama and Atlanta get hit with snow. And we were like, it'd be kind of nice to get a little snow here.
But that Bills Colts game was unbelievable to watch because it was snowing so hard that you could hardly see things through the camera at some points. Like it was just football.
It was awesome.
John Madden was probably losing his mind somewhere.
I love football in the snow. I love it. I think it's hilarious. Jacoby Brissett is like high stepping for first downs.
High knees. Yeah, everyone running like Roger Craig.
Yeah, well, and when you cut, it takes like four steps to plant and cut instead of like one. You know, it's one like running backs, it's like one cut and go.
Right.
Like you plant a leg and you go on a route. Like it's like a curve.
You got to stutter.
Yeah,
stutter.
There's like
don't
three
fall,
or
don't
four
fall.
Steps when you try to cut back, and the other guy's trying to cut do the same. It's so much fun to watch. Taylor Lewan, it looks like he said after the game that he's never really had any back problems before, but he woke up real tight Sunday morning, left the game 10 minutes to go, roughly speaking, in the second quarter, and that he's going to have an MRI today. on the back, and that it was just he thinks it's just wrong place, wrong time. But you know, maybe you sleep on it wrong, and that can happen. But
yeah.
I don't know. A very strange injury. It seems, and he was very upset. Obviously, he's from Arizona.
Right.
Got to play. He was wanting to play in front of friends and family, so I was pretty upset.
He's having an MRI
so.
Today, I believe, and we haven't heard anything. At least I haven't seen anything out there talking about any results from the MRI. I think it's a little bit concerning though when the guy who has had no history of back problems now has a back problem. So. I mean, hopefully, again,
could be nothing.
It could be a strain. It could be anything. You know, it could be something minor. I'm hoping that MRI comes back clear so that you know, the Titans can have their franchise left tackle.
And I would say, in a game where you struggled to run the football, create any rhythm on offense, that not having your big time star left tackle. I mean, I'm not saying Dennis Kelly didn't perform well, fine, but not having your superstar left tackle out there had to be a big, big reason that the offense struggled yesterday.
And listen, like this next week, Joe Rexroad said, this is probably the biggest game of Mike Mularkey's coaching career. Huge game for the Titans against the 49ers, which now look a little bit dangerous with Jimmy Garoppolo playing quarterback. You'd love to have your left tackle to play against, you know, the 25th ranked defense in the NFL. Hoping you can just...
Rushing defense.
Hopefully you can run downhill on these guys if you're the Tennessee Titans. It helps having Taylor Lewan. Although Kelly has some great lettuce. Let's be real.
Oh, for sure.
Amazing.
For sure. Also news coming out of Preds world is, I guess, UC Soros has been recalled. That makes sense considering they're about to go on a West Coast swing and they're going to have back-to-back games on Wednesday and Thursday night at Vancouver on Wednesday and at... Edmonton on Thursday. You expect UC Soros, after coming off the best performance of his career probably against Dallas last week, he's probably going to be in the lineup one of the two games, either Vancouver or Edmonton. The good news about this stretch here, and we talked to Pete Weber, it does maybe slow some momentum for the Predators a little bit because they got into such a rhythm and they were playing so well. That the good news is you're going to go, you know, 9 days and Pekka will have played one game.
It's awesome.
Like, that's good for him because a little breather for him is probably a good thing.
Right, and I think the better that Soros plays, the better it is for the Predators. And the more rest you can give Pekka down the, you know, before the playoffs and before that home stretch when you really need Pekka Rinne to be on top of his game, the better. I think it's almost like, you know, having a star, you know, a star running back or a star receiver or – You're able to give rest. You know, it was an older guy. Like if you were able to rest Brady, if they clinch and you can rest Tom Brady the last one or two games of the season, then he gets 3 weeks rest, and
right.
You have the best of your older player. And I think that's the same thing with Pekka Rinne. So good news that Soros' play is on the uptick at this point.
Luke, always a pleasure, man. Thanks for hanging out at the Luke Rogers.
Yes,
on the Twitter
app.
Although their Twitter account isn't at the Twitter. Theirs is just at Twitter, right?
At Twitter, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Don't forget, tomorrow, again, another chance to win a $100 gift card from A Moment's Peace Salon and Day Spa as well. We're going to talk. We got some Preds coming up tomorrow as well as some Heisman Trophy talk, so don't go anywhere, folks. 3D coming up next for Luke Rogers. Thank you so much for hanging out with us.
Always
my name's Greg Gall, Julian Council, intern of science, Melody back there as well. Thanks for listening. 3D coming up next right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.